Hello, party people, and welcome to Barcelona, Spain. We are standing outside of the called Barcelona Pavilion. This was originally constructed, if I remember right, for a World's Fair by Mies van der Rohe, a German architect. I have wanted to see this for decades, and I just happened to be walking past it. We're on a month-long European trip. Been in Barcelona the last few days. I was just walking past it like a block away, and I was like, I know exactly what that building is. It's like a holy grail for architects. It's one of the first modern buildings out there. And it's deceivingly simple. You know, you look at pictures of it and you're like, ah, it's just a few walls. But walking through there, it's really meditative. Absolutely beautiful environment. Had a really good time. Spent about an hour just walking through there. Makes me wish I had a truly modern house, not one of the kind of generic boxes that we see these days that passes for modern. But absolutely beautiful, totally breathtaking. We love Barcelona. It's our first time in Barcelona and totally love it. People have been wonderful. The food's fantastic. It's really been an absolute joy. So looking forward to coming back here and spending more time at some point. Today is the end of our Barcelona journey, though. We're getting ready to board a cruise ship and head, thus the kind of maritime sailor-looking outfit there. I'm heading out to France, Italy, Ibiza, Mallorca, a bunch of places. It's Eve's first time in Europe, so we have a bunch of fun trips planned along the way. And then hopping over to Data Saturday, Croatia, and then Sequel Bits in London. We'll finish up the trip. All kinds of fun stuff going on here. So it's time to stop and take your questions. It's funny, there's so many places I could have taken your questions that are beautiful. There's a gorgeous museum here, the Catalan National Museum. There's the seaside is nearby, but I was like, this has just been such a holy grail for me that I had to share it with you. I'm so excited. It's amazing, and hopefully I had some people learn about the Barcelona Pavilion. So let's see here. First up we have, let's throw a pop-up poll gab. James says, I noticed in your last office hour session that your shoes looked huge. There's a joke in here somewhere. Do you have big feet? I'm just curious, what shoe size do you wear? This sounds like it's the beginning of somebody's foot fetish. I happen to like large Balenciaga sneakers. They have really fun designs and they're comically big. So my feet are kind of big to begin with, like size 12, 13 American, 45, 46 European. But with Balenciaga shoes, they become hilariously large. I should kind of show you. I'm in tiny little like ballerina slippers today. I guess I'll show them to you. Let's see if you can see them. So there's the slippers I'm in today. Normally I wouldn't wear socks with these, but I had to walk over here real quick, and so I was like, I don't want to get them all sweaty. They're kind of nice. So there you go. There's your feet thing for the day, I suppose. Next up, Jerry says, you mentioned in a previous session a professional association for SQL Server. I've also heard about the PaaS Summit. Are they related? Yes, very clever you, Professional Association for SQL Server, PASS. So a long time ago, it was called a Professional Association for SQL Server, but they ran into some kind of legal gotcha where they're not allowed to call themselves a professional association because they technically weren't. They're like in some countries, there are legal requirements for being a professional organization or professional association. So they had to change to just the name PaaS, since it's not really a professional association. PaaS kind of went bankrupt during COVID, just didn't have enough sale or enough cash set aside. And so they ended up selling the organization's assets, like the PaaS Summit, over to Redgate Software. Someday, probably years from now, I'll tell you about how I tried to make a bid for the PaaS organization myself and was denied. But there you go. That'll be for some other time. Next up, My Tea Got Cold says, are availability groups the hardest thing in all of SQL Server? It's as if you can't debug them without a deep knowledge of SQL Server internals. I would say they're one of the most complex things in SQL Server. because they span multiple servers, they can span multiple domains, they can span different operating systems, they can consist of multiple databases, they can have different methods of failover, like synchronous with automatic failover, asynchronous with manual failover. They can be used for high availability, disaster recovery, scale out reads. There's so many things with them that are really more complicated than any other feature I can think of. And at the same time, they're the least invested by Microsoft in terms of troubleshooting capabilities. That the Availability Groups dashboard came out in like 2012, and I don't think it's really changed at all since, even though the complexity of AGs has totally skyrocketed. Even just doing something as simple as debugging why a failover happened is surprisingly hard. So that's the big reason why I gave them up. I used to be a production database administrator. I used to do troubleshooting on stuff like that. And when I saw Microsoft was bringing out support for Linux in there, I just said, you know what? I cash out. If you're not going to build any decent troubleshooting tools, I just don't want to do it for a living. It's not that I don't buy it's not that I don't like the technology. Technology is awesome. It's really cool. I've nothing against it. I recommend it. There's lots of places where it makes sense. But I just don't want to do it for a living because it's such a pain in the rear and I didn't want to build tools for it myself. I think there is an opening like out in the market for someone to build a tool to help troubleshoot availability group failovers, for example. If you talk to Microsoft people, they're like, well, all you have to do is chain these three undocumented things together and just read the logs. How hard can it be? And I'm like, okay, yeah, meanwhile, back here in reality. Next up, Raha asks, hi, Brent, how do you create a non-clustered index or ultra-clustered index on a large table where blocking is unacceptable to the system? So this is kind of tricky. It's not that blocking should stop you. It sounds like you're just not on Enterprise Edition. With Enterprise Edition, you can create non-clustered indexes and clustered indexes with a brief schema-only lock at the tail end of the transaction. And you can even set the priority on that in recent versions of SQL Server. So that is an Enterprise Edition-only feature. So what you want to do then is talk to management and say, here's what it would cost us for us to switch over to Enterprise Edition and avoid that blocking. Oh, management doesn't want to spend it? Okay, so then it is acceptable to have blocking. As a database administrator, I got a real easy tool for you. All you got to do is put the credit card in the front. If it is truly unacceptable to you, put the credit card in the front. Otherwise, when you don't put the credit card in, that tells me that it is acceptable to you. Next up, Data Barbie Administrator, I haven't heard that one before, says, hi Brent, what was your worst experience with a customer and how did you handle it? Worst is a tricky question. Worst could mean something that went terribly technically wrong. Like there was a catastrophic technical issue in the environment. Worse can also mean politically, you know, like that there was something politically that was a challenge in the organization that had nothing to do with the server itself. You know, maybe someone just wanted their way or refused to budge or had unrealistic expectations. Worse can also mean the terrible news that I've had to give a client. So it can mean a lot of different things. And I don't want to make someone feel like their issue is the worst. So I don't think I'm going to, what is it that they say? Raise the kimono or open the kimono. There's this really tacky saying about lifting your skirt to show something. But that I don't think I'm going to do that here. But hopefully that gives you an idea. There are a lot of ways that projects can go wrong with a client. The ones where I think I feel the worst Because I don't mind political problems. That just is what it is. By now, at this point, I'm like, okay, so, you know, let's just go through how to win friends and influence people, and, you know, figure out how we're going to crack this nut and get people to get on the same page. If it's a technical problem that's a really bad thing that's happening at the client, I mean, I've seen database corruptions, drives fill ups, SANs go offline. Those I don't really feel too bad. Okay, here's the one. I'm drawing this way out. The ones where I feel the worst is when management has unfair expectations of their staff, like they expect their staff to move mountains with no resources whatsoever, and they're very understaffed. Like that these poor people have been working 60, 70 hours a week trying to keep this ship afloat. And management refuses to give them any resources. I feel really bad for the staff, because it is hard to just drop and go get a new job. It's not like you can just go, especially in these days in this economy. It can be really hard to find the kind of work that you want. So when I have to handle that with clients, I actually lay it out in terms of, here are the problems that the technical staff are facing. Management, here are the places where you have to make an investment, because the staff can't make this investment for you. You can't expect the staff to get their wallet out and hire more people to help, for example. And sometimes management doesn't want to hear that. Sometimes management says, well, we hired you to figure it out. I'm like, I don't have enough time to do that either, you know, that I can tell you what the problems are, but I can't fix them all for you in the span of time that we purchased here today. And when management is upset about that, those are the ones that I feel the worst for, because I know I get to walk away as a consultant, but the client, the staff at the client have to stick around because they just don't have any other choice. And I know things get worse for them instead of better. There was one case like that at a very large company, one that you've heard of, where I had to give that news to management and just say, you're not listening to your technical staff, and they are deeply understaffed. You know, it's up to you to go fix that. And I know from talking to the staff that years later, the staff kept bringing those findings up, and management would just say, we don't care, you've got to figure out how to fix it, which just isn't fair to the staff. So sad. Next up, Caught Brent's Cold says, are CAL licenses permanent? The official licensing guide was no help. They're permanent in the sense that you don't have to pay like renewal fees for them, but they are tied to the SQL Server version that you bought. Like it'll be a SQL Server 2022 CAL, for example. And then if you decide to upgrade to a newer SQL Server version, that's where you have to rebuy the CALs for whatever new version you want to connect to. Typically, when people buy the Server plus CAL licenses, it's because they're being extremely cheap. Those kinds of people also don't hassle with software assurance, because it's just generally one standalone server. There's no need for high availability or disaster recovery. They are not paying for upgrade rights. They are just simply keeping that ship afloat for extended periods of time. So you'll see them get 10 years, 15 years worth of usage out of it. And then when they want to go jump again, they jump and rebuy core licenses instead. Next up, QEnt says, hi Brent, during your consulting career, have you ever faced a situation where a client or department challenged your knowledge or your competency? Oh, sure. And I don't take any offense to that at all. It's totally okay. There are a lot of incompetent people out there masquerading as consultants. So I take no offense. If I always feel like if there's anything I can do to help prove something, I'd be glad to. I can be wrong about things. So if someone says, no, you're full of poop or whatever, I'm like, totally, no problem. Let's hop over into my lab, and I can, without touching your production box, I can reproduce the same scenario, and I can show you, here's what's happening on your server. Here's what I recommend to change in order to fix it, and I'll show you why that works. I've no problem. It's one of the reasons that I love using a lab for this kind of thing, because I can show them and prove them. Other times, and I've written about this before on the blog, other times people will say, no, you're wrong. This is what we're going to do to fix it. And I have a simple line. Okay, sounds like you got it all under control. Peace out. And what that just means is if you have the answers, go do the thing. Go prove it. And then that's when very quickly people will go, well, we tried and it didn't work. I'm like, okay, so do you want to try my way? If you don't, that's okay. I'm totally all right with you. You don't have to take my advice. I can show it to you over in my lab, but if you don't want to take the advice, that's okay too. I also, because I teach for a living, I am also very comfortable showing people stuff. Like, because I look at it as a fun discovery. If you think I'm full of poop, I don't blame you, because a lot of stuff that I work with in SQL Server seems like far-fetched. Seems like it shouldn't have to be that way. So I love the opportunity to show people, get a load of this crazy thing inside the database server. That's really fun to me. And sometimes they can't be convinced, and that's okay. That's all right. Can lead a horse to water, but I can't make him think. Dankula Flow, whatever that means, says, should I treat the block process report like query store and turn it on by default? Whoa, hold up. So I don't tell people to turn query store on by default either. You'll hear that from some folks. Anything that you turn on in SQL Server has overhead. Don't incur the overhead unless you're going to get a benefit from it. With Query Store, there are increasing new benefits in the newer versions of SQL Server, especially on Enterprise Edition, where Query Store can help reshape plans even after you restart, doing things like adaptive memory grants, parameter-sensitive plan optimization. The stuff can be helped by the presence of Query Store. But if you're not on Enterprise Edition, or if you're not actively tuning queries, don't turn the feature on. It has overhead. Block process report has overhead. Don't turn the feature on unless you're actively troubleshooting blocked processes. Don't. Otherwise, leave the buttons off. BA with DBA Hobby asks, I have separate disks for the database log files in TempDB. When I switch production from simple to full recovery model, the latencies on the disks, database disks go wild. I would expect the latencies on the log files to go up, but not the database. What could this be? I don't think you're measuring the right stuff. First off, the difference between full and simple recovery model, I don't think it is what you think it is. SQL Server writes the same stuff in both to the transaction log. Makes no difference, full or simple recovery model. The writes are the same. SQL Server is logging your transactions. Because after all, even in simple recovery model, if your transaction gets halfway through and it has to roll back to earlier, where do you think that data comes from? It comes from the transaction log. So your inserts, updates, and deletes, that stuff's getting logged in the database log files, no matter what recovery model. I said something tricky. Not no matter what recovery model, because there are some gotcha differences around bulk logged, but that's a totally separate story. So I think because what you're measuring is wrong and what you're proposing is wrong, I question everything about that scenario and step way back and go, what's the problem that you're trying to solve, and start from there. And then we'll do one more. Let's see here. World Peace asks, hi, Brent. The following scripts need XP command shell. It's SP all night log and SP all night log setup and SP database restore. It says Azure Serverless and SQL Server managed instances don't support XP command shell. Is there a workaround or a plan to fix this in the future? No, because I don't use SP all night log or SP database restore in Azure SQL DB serverless or managed instances. This is where, again, we step back and say, what's the problem you're trying to solve? Because you don't really want to do log shipping from serverless databases or from managed instances. I'd question what you're trying to do there. If you want disaster recovery in either of those scenarios, that's what managed instances and Azure SQL DB serverless do for you. you simply swipe the credit card and say, I want replicas in these other locations. There's no need for you to get involved. And in fact, you shouldn't be involved in that. That's the whole reason that your company went to platform as a service, is to get your little peanut butter sticky covered hands out from over the database. If you think you're trying to set up a read replica, again, that is exactly what read replicas up in the cloud are for. What's the problem that you're trying to solve? Step back and go there. Well, all right, there's a bunch of answers for you. It is now time for me to go check out of the hotel and go board the cruise ship. I also have to check and make sure that Eve actually has her bags packed there. We're running way past the last minute there on that one. So I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.